Today is August 31st, 1993. This is Beverly Woods talking to Mr. Frank Zaliski. And tell me about your dad. What was his name?
His name was Joseph Zaliski, you know.
Uh-huh.
No middle name.
No middle name?
And he came to this country when he was 12 years old.
Where did he come from?
From Lithuania.
Oh, from Lithuania.
Yeah.
How do you say it? Lithuania?
Lithuania, yeah. Uh-huh. It's those three little Baltic countries right next to Poland.
Uh-huh. And how did he happen to come here?
Well, his dad was over here. And so he wanted to... This is his dad.
Did his whole family come?
No, his mother stayed over there. Hmm. But his sister was over here.
Mm-hmm. But so he came on the ship and everything all by himself?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And 12 years old. And he worked on the boat.
Oh, what did he do?
He helped in the kitchen cooking.
Uh-huh. That's amazing.
It is.
At 12. Well, then how did he get here once he landed? Where would he have landed?
In New York. He landed in New York.
And then where was his dad?
His dad was working in New York someplace.
Uh-huh.
And and his sister was in New York. She was already over there. And so he stayed with his sister.
And then how did he end up in Arizona?
Well, he was staying with his sister, and his sister was working for a mining executive that was that had mines in Colorado, and Dad was out the yard just fooling around, you know, out around the thing, and so he noticed Dad walking around there, and he asked my dad's sister, well, who's that chap? And so she told him, and he says, well, I'd sure like to take him to Colorado with me. So he takes him into Colorado, and he had a mine way up on top of the hill in Colorado. And stone like everything, you know, during the winter months. And so he'd have Dad to carry mail up to the miners. So Dad had to take a bag of mail up to the miners, and he'd use these snowshoes to carry the mail up there, and carry a pair of skis on his shoulder, over his shoulder.
Hmm. And he was still fairly young then.
Oh yeah, he was really young.
He was still a boy.
He was probably 18, 19, something like that.
Uh-huh.
Could have been. And so then after he'd deliver his mail, he'd puts on his skis. And in about 2 minutes, he's home. Which took him about an hour or 2 hours to get up there with the mail up the hill.
Huh.
Yeah. Something. Then he got covered up about three times in snow slides. And he thought, well, he's going to go to Arizona.
He'd had enough of that.
He had enough of that.
Huh, that's something from Colorado.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So he came out here and he worked for different farmers out the valley. And
you have a rough idea of what year that might have been?
It could have been probably 1907 or 8. Uh-huh. And then he went back east, got married, and he worked for Swift Company for they used to, 1978, where all that was all the meat was delivered with a wagon and a team. And so he got tired of that, and so he told my mother, well, let's go to Arizona. And if you want to come, wife, or if you want to go, or go with me. If not, well, you can stay here.
Hmm. So, how had he met your mother?
Through his sister. She came from the old country, too.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, from Lithuania also.
As a young girl?
Oh, yeah. She was 13 or 14 when she came over.
Huh.
Yeah.
And what was her name?
Lucy Skidmore.
How do you spell the last name?
Skidmore.
That's kind of a different name.
Yeah.
And so then she did come west with him, I guess.
Yeah, huh? She did.
Huh. And how did they travel, you suppose?
What do you mean, from New York out
here? Uh-huh.
Well, probably by trade. Uh-huh. It could have been by trade. And then he got a job in the mines here. And we worked in the mines here for X number of years, I'd say probably 8 or 10 years. And in those days, they didn't have this modern equipment in the mines. And you get dusted awful easy. That's that miner's consumption.
Uh-huh.
And so he got this, a touch of it. And he got sick one day and came into the hospital and had a checkup. And so they said they'd have to lay him off. And that he couldn't work anymore in the mines. They just, turn him loose. And $200 settlement, you just think of that, way back then. And Brophy used to have you've heard of Brophy's. Mm-hmm. And he had a business there in Lowell. And he had a carriage station, a delivery. I mean, he had buggies and teams and
like a livery stable.
Delivery stable, yes. And so they hires out a buggy and a team and went out to the valley, was looking around. There was a party that homesteaded 160 acres out there. And relinquished, but you know what that is. That's primary papers on your homestead.
What do they call it?
Relinquishment.
Relinquishment.
Yes.
Where they take over his papers then?
Where with the county or what the state that they have to file, that they'd have to live on there so long a time to get deed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they goes out to this one place they liked it. They asked him if how long they lived there, and they said, 3 or 4 months or whatever it was. They didn't live there long enough to settle on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the folks bought it for $200. I mean, this their paperwork.
Uh-huh. They would sort of buy his claim, and then it would be up to them to finish the requirements, right?
Require a term, yeah. Uh-huh. Bought the land. It was down in the valley.
This was the San Pedro Valley?
Oh, San Pedro Valley, uh-huh. Yes. And no water, no nothing on the property. And so they have to dig a well. And the smaller the hole, the less dirt that you have to, get out to dig your well. So Dad kept the handle off, partly on the pick, so that he could, move around that hole a lot easier than to get a regular pick handle. And they went down 120 feet. And my mother was pulling this dirt out of the well with a burro, with a donkey. And she had one of these windlasses.
Mm-hmm.
And Edsel had this donkey hooked up to the rope on this windlass. She'd lead this donkey out to they had a post down to the ground to where they could tie this donkey to this post after the bucket of dirt would come out. And then she'd have to walk back to the bucket and dump it, and then go lead the burro back and let the bucket back down to the mine in the holes. So they got to where they got some water, and they started in there. And they had a few head of cattle, and he'd farm a little bit. And in those days, you could we used to have a lot more rains than what we have now.
I've heard that there were.
Yeah, that you could dry land farm, and if you had a good season, you could do quite well. So, and so then he he was doing pretty well, and the main banker here was Lim Shattuck. He was president of the Miners and Merchants Bank. And there was a party in the mountains there that had a loan on 160 acres. And so Dad comes into the bank for some business or whatever, and he says that he wanted my dad to have this piece of property. And my dad says, well, I don't have any money. And he says, who's asking me for any money? So then Harry says, you'll pay it.
Wasn't that nice?
Yeah. And a handshake was everything. So then he got this, Dad got this piece of property, and he got a half a school section with it, a state lease with it, and kept getting a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. Then in 1937, they had two or three cabins built out there.
Now, where was the location of
Montezuma Canyon?
In Montezuma Canyon.
Yeah, and there was a miner, businessman that was a bank manager back in Missouri someplace, that came out and stayed in one of these cabins during the winter, and so he liked the location and liked the weather, so he'd mine out in these different canyons, but he had his mother and his daughter there. He was divorced, so he stayed there, and he says, well, listen, Harry says, I was in business most of his life back in Missouri or wherever, and he says, hey, let's build up a guest ranch for the Easterners. So my dad went in for it, and since he had these two or three cabins already, and so they put up a six-unit one structure with solid partitions between the units. It was concrete, solid concrete, no blocks. And
that was a lot of work.
Oh, yes, that was a lot of work. And so the first year, they did real good. And then that old boy got married the second time. Like I say, he was just with his brother and daughter out there, and son, rather. And they started to get ritzy, you know, that getting big in the business, what they thought or something. And so they had this yard boy, and they'd pull off parties there. It had this yard boy at the cattle guard coming in. And if you didn't have a permit or invitation to this party, you couldn't come in.
Wow.
And of course that made a lot of these people sore about it. I mean that helped theoretically to make go out of it. And so they were losing business right and left. And so then one of the guests there, they told my folks that they wanted to take the place over after this guy was going to go, because they knew she's going to fade out of the picture pretty quick. And he was with the Highway Travelers magazine back in Cleveland. And when she pulled out, he and his wife came out and looked the thing over, and they said, yeah, they wanted to take it, because he could be in the advertising section of this Highway Travelers magazine. He could pinpoint all these reservations. You know what I mean? Could get mm-hmm. reservations from all over the United States to come in there. And so they came over and they checked over the whole setup. And, I think they bought probably $300 or $400, maybe more than that, of linens and different things, stuff to go on the wall, some Mexican doodads from across the line, and so then they were doing pretty well, but this lady from this fellow's wife that was from Cleveland, she was pretty strict. She says, "Now listen, none of you people are going to have drinks in the lodge. You go down to your own room if you want to have a drink." And if they come out here to sort of let their hair down, you know, and be themselves. They don't want to be, you know, pushed around. So then, it kept, their business kept getting lower and lower on that. And so she went through about three groups of help there in a month. I mean, on account of that, you know. I must have been about 22, 23. And I was the chief flunky around there. She'd if they did a special trip into Bisbee or someplace or Danco, she'd send me empty in Danco, so I'd come in and pick up the stuff. Or clean out some room, you know, after they go out or whatever it is, mm-hmm. while I was in. So one day she comes out there and out of her room just crying like everything. I said, "Well, what's the matter, Mrs. Cochran?" And she says, "Well, I've given up this place." She says, "I can't stand the pressure." I say, "Well, three groups of help. I mean, it is a lot of pressure when you got probably 8 or 10 people, you know, that you have to cater to."
Uh-huh.
So I told her, I said, "Well, Mrs. Cochran," I says, this place has been built up with buildings and everything else, and there's guests here and stuff of that sort. And I says, "Why, we can't close it up." She says, "Well, what am I going to do?" I says, "Well, listen, will you let me take it over, and I'll pay you for whatever stuff you brought in here." So I paid her off of what she brought the extra money, you know, that she put into the place. So I started in. I had liquor in the refrigerator all the time for them. They loved them like a shot of liquor before dinner and what have you. So made trips across the line and getting all over the Nogales. The White Lightning Ranch used to be one of my competitors at the time.
I was going to ask if you had a name for your...
Yeah, Montezuma. Okay. It was Montezuma Guest Ranch.
Uh-huh.
It was called Boulder Ranch before. I kept going pretty good until they start rationing stuff during rationing days. Of all things, I mean, you get four people and everything goes smooth, you know. Everything goes smooth. You get the fifth one and boy, I mean, they could stir up enough trouble to make up for the whole bunch of them. So this rationing, why, they said, I'd have to get stamps from them, you know, to buy meat and sugar.
That would have been World War II.
Yes, uh-huh. The beginning of World War II. And sugar and stuff of that sort. Some of these people that were persnickety, why, they came up to me and said, "Well, listen, that party's eating more meat. I only got just a crease about that size taste of that meat that you had for dinner or whatever, you know." So the business kept getting down lower and lower, and there was a army officer from the finance department out of Fort Pachuca. He'd like to come over there and shoot the breeze with the guests, and have a cup of coffee, and sit around in the lodge, and, you know, and just talk to the people. And somebody says, listen, Frank, I'm going to tell you something. Perry says, I can see that you're going down in business. And I says, yes. He says, I can fill this up for you, to this place, with Army personnel. And it'll be totally officers from the Army. And you turn the kitchen over to them. Let them do their own cooking. You don't have to worry about it. And can just charge them for their lodging. Whatever I forget what it was at that time, way back down the line. It wasn't anywhere near what it would cost right down today. And he filled me up right away, and he says, you don't have to worry about pay because I'm the head of the finance department, and I could get their check. You'll see that I've got my money. And so that's when I was called into the Army soon after that. And so the folks sold a place out while I was in the Army.
Oh.
Sold the guest ranch portion of it.
Uh-huh. Your family still owned it at that time.
It still owned it, though, uh-huh. Yeah. And then when I was in the Army, I was in there until 1946.
Uh-huh.
And then I came out of the Army, and then a couple years later, I was married. And so the ranch wasn't big enough to take care of two families. So I went out and started working on the outside.
Uh-huh.
And then finally the people sold the place out entirely because Dad was getting too old to manipulate. And like I told you, he had that touch of that miner's consumption.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, let's backtrack a little bit to when you were born. Is that where you were born and grown?
I was born in Bisbee.
Uh-huh. What year was that now?
It was 1915, April 22nd.
Mm-hmm. And then did you grow up there at the ranch in the?
Well, I grew up at the at this little small place that they had to the other side of Hereford that they first got.
Yeah, you know, I didn't ask you the location on that.
Yeah, that was about 3 miles the other side of Hereford.
And what was that like? What was Hereford like then?
Well, Hereford was a going concern. It was the headquarters for the Bokeus Land and Cattle Company, and they had a two-story building there for the cowboys and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
It was there, and they had a shipping center there, stockyards.
And the train would have come right through there then.
Oh yes.
Uh-huh.
And and practically, I'd say this that. I'm using these figures at random. Probably about of, I don't want to overdo it. I'll say an eighth of the cattle out of Mexico was shipped through Hereford. So it was at one time considered the largest cattle shipping center in the United States.
And they were shipping out of Mexico through there?
Yeah, through Hereford.
Uh-huh.
They'd drive across the line. And
Were the people then like Americans that had ranches down there?
No, it was Americans, yeah, with Mexican cowboys that held normally. And so they'd cross the cattle down at San Pedro. That's south of the bright spot. They had some corrals down there. And they'd have to hold them in these little small fenced-in units. And all the cattle had to be dipped before they came to the States.
I wondered if they'd have to be inspected.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they had to be inspected, too.
Uh-huh. What are they dipping for? What were they trying to eradicate?
Oh, get rid of the lice and the ticks and what have you. And then after that, why that hoof mouth disease came in.
Oh.
And so they were really strict after that. And at one point there, they had 4,000 head down at Hereford. Think of that. 4,000 head. They shipped out there for about 4 days, I think.
That's something. Well, was there a store at Hereford?
There was a store there, and a depot, a trade depot there, and two maintenance houses there of the foreman of the working crew for the railroad, mm-hmm. and the signal maintainer, and then they had this big unit that for these workers, Mexicans and what have you, that worked on the railroad.
And what about a post office?
They had a post office. Post office. Yeah. Yeah.
And now all that, there's nothing there now, is there?
There isn't anything there now.
Just not, some foundations.
Not hardly anything. Nothing else. No. They had a big water tank there. And there were two passenger trains going both ways there.
That's what I was wondering.
And one of them was the Golden State Limited, the other was the Argonaut. And so they, and this Bertie Delaney that I was telling you about. They did that, you know, that I never saw it in ladies' clothing. Why, anyway, she had gone out on the mail run, and there was a minister out of Bisbee here that wanted to get a little bit of money from her, see. So he takes a drive out there to the Hereford Post Office, and he says, do you know where I could find Mrs. Bernice Delaney? And it's the party that was running the Hereford store and the post office was Sherman. And the lady was the postmaster, evidently, you know, that her husband was a carpenter up at Fort Pachuca. And so she said, well, yeah, she's out on the mail route, but she'll be in about 1 o'clock. And he says, well, I'll come back. And so then she makes her rounds, and this Nellie Sherman told this Bernie Delaney that, well, the minister was over there, that she had company coming in, and so she used to walk over to the depot that was about 200 yards over to the depot from the post office and the Hereford store. That was all in one bunch, the Hereford store and the post office.
It was all in one building.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so she walked over there, and they had these metal steel-wheeled carts. You've seen them at these post offices. And so she was sitting on one of these carts, here rolling a cigarette, like so. No rouge, you know, like that. And so
she's the one who dressed in Levi's always.
Yeah, all the time, yes. And so then he comes up to her, seeing her sitting there, you know, doing nothing, just smoking a cigarette. And he says, "Do you know where I can find Mrs. Bernice Delaney?" She says, "Who?" And he says, "Do you know where I can find Mrs. Bernice Delaney?" And she says, "Oh, by the way, yes." Said, "Why?" She was just here in a green-looking car, and she went right down that road to Bisbee, and if you go fast enough, you might be able to... So she got rid of him. Right, quick, like.
That's funny.
Yeah, so he didn't get any money out.
Well, how far was your place from the river, then?
3 miles.
Uh-huh.
3 miles
from there. And at that time, were there still, like, those Chinese people that did farming and stuff, or was that further on up by Fairbank? Maybe that wasn't down by...
It could have been by Fairbank.
That wasn't down in your
no,
area?
No, there was too much farming. There was a little bit of vegetable farming there, and alfalfa hay, but not to any great extent.
Uh-huh.
And there was a dairy there. There was a dairy, Hereford Dairy, was in there.
Huh. Where did you go to school then?
I started school at Palominas, the first and second grade, I think. And then the daughter of the owner of the White Lightning Ranch, she had gone to college and got a teacher's degree, and so she got a job at the Hereford School. And the folks' place was a half mile off of the road from this guest ranch down to Hereford School. And so I'd have to walk out there, and she'd pick me up and take me down to school.
So there was a Hereford school
there. Yeah, there was a Hereford school there. And I don't think that there was ever over about 16 kids in that school at the most. And so she'd take me down there. And this time I must have been about 10 or 12 years old, I guess. No. Yeah, about 10 or 12. And so she bought after about a year or 2 years teaching, she bought a Model T Ford coupe. And so she had a boyfriend back east someplace that was one of the guests there at the ranch. And so she dumped her mail, and she asked me if I'd want to drive her car. Being a kid, you know, that age, well, great big me, you know. And so I'd drive her car up to where I got off, and she could...
Part of the way home, huh?
I mean, got 3 miles. I only have to walk a half mile off the road.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, so
that where was the little school located?
It was north of the Hereford store. Well, about probably a quarter of a mile. Probably maybe not even that.
Did you spend a lot of time around the river when you were a kid?
Played down off there? And on. Yeah, they had picnics down there off the river. And be down there.
Was there a lot more water in it then than now?
I think there was a little bit more water.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And in 1926 down, there was, it rained here for, you wouldn't believe this, but it rained here for 7 days and seven nights. Just a drizzle, you know, it'd be a drizzle, and then mm-hmm. then it'd be a pretty good little shower, then drizzle for the rest of the 2 or 3 hours, and then another shower.
That's amazing.
And the river, now the San Pedro River, you know that. You know where the bridge crosses the river? They're going out 92, right by the bright spot.
Mm-hmm. How long is crossing?
Where that first house on this side of the river, there used to be a dairy there, and they had a milk house, about three times the size of this room, where they separated their milk at that time. There wasn't any pasteurized milk way back down the line. Mm-hmm. It was all raw milk. And so the river was up high enough to where there were 2 feet of water in that milk house. So you know how much water came down.
It was really out of its banks.
And it took a section out of the bridge there at Palominas, and it took a section out of the bridge at Hereford.
My goodness.
And so they had to put in two
that
sections.
That was a lot of rain.
Oh, that was a lot of rain, yes. That was a lot of rain.
Well, how isolated were you out there? I mean,
pardon?
How isolated? Did you have a car?
Oh, yeah. Well, Dad was quite a mechanic. I mean, and he learned it all through practical experience, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, just doing it, huh?
He'd buy 3 or 4 cars someplace and fix up 1 or 2 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And just for wheels, just to be driving around. And I got to drive early. I was 10 years old when I was driving a car by myself. Life was early.
Yeah, that is early.
Yeah.
Of course, on dirt roads, you don't need a license.
No, and they didn't have any license in at all. I mean, no cops on the roads, no nothing. And after I finished... I got my 8th grade diploma out at Hereford School, and so there were about 3 or 4 more kids out there that had finished the 8th grade, and they were scheduled to come here to the Bisbee High School. So all the trustees got together one session, and wanted to select one of the youngsters to use their car and to drive a bus. So they had chosen me. So I drove a bus in here. Dad bought a the first Model A that came out, probably. And so I was all those kids in a business here. I was given 50 cents a head from the county.
So you were going to school and being the bus driver at the same time?
Yeah, at the same time, yeah. Just enough money to pay for the gas, not even enough to pay the car payments.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that big a help then, huh?
No, it just enough to keep me on the road.
Was that road paved then, or was it?
No, dirt? It was dirt. It was dirt at that time.
Did it go about the same way it does now?
Yes. Well, coming out of Hereford now, about 2 miles this out of Hereford, you probably noticed that the white belly's on the right coming this way out of Hereford. It'd be on the left side going into Hereford.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the dairy was. And then the road would turn off there and it head toward this. Let me think of it. It's that. This peak of this mountain at the corner of it. What do they call that?
I don't know where you mean exactly.
Going out toward the Fletcher, driving that bright spot.
Mm-hmm.
Highlands, don't Highlands. Highlands, that's the other way. Yeah.
But I don't know what the name is.
Deer Point.
Oh, Deer Point.
Deer Point, yeah, was the name of it. It had come around the point of Deer Point, then on into Bisbee here. And it used to come out down here, about 2 miles down the Stanka Road. Where it says Hereford Road, there's a street in there, Hereford Road.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, a part of the street yet.
I'll have to look for that. I didn't even realize that was where.
Yeah, it's right where you make that little bend where the water company is on the right-hand side.
Uh-huh.
It's right in there.
Yeah, I guess I have seen that, but it never occurred to me that was part of the road from Hereford.
Part of the old dirt road, yeah. Huh. Like used to come in here.
Go ahead. Well, I just wondered how this is a little different subject, but how your mother liked all this. Did she mind being out so isolated? And
no, she enjoyed being out.
She liked that?
Yeah. Then Dad regained his health, and he was able to come back and work in the mines, and so she'd stay out there all alone and come in here once a week with a team and horses and get supplies and take my dad home on a Friday and bring him back Sunday evening.
That's something.
They traveled about half the night getting back home.
Well, did she do most of her shopping in Bisbee then?
Oh, yeah, both of her shopping. Mm-hmm. Frankly, all of it.
Yeah. Well, what was she like? Tell me what your mom was like.
She was a small gal. She'd come right under my arm. I mean, I could put my arm over her head. Yeah, she was that small. But she was a hard worker. And she'd go along with my dad. They'd have their arguments, yes. My dad would go off and leave for 2 or 3 days, a lot of times. And then he'd come back, and they wouldn't talk to one another for 2 or 3 days. Pretty soon, a little word would come out, or 2 or 3 words the first day. And then the next meal or something, some more would come out. Then they'd get all right again for another 2 or 3 months, and they'd have another argument.
Sounds like they were both stubborn.
Oh, yeah. They were set in their ways, pretty much.
What was your house like out there? Was it adobe?
It was part of the adobe, but they started out with a frame house. And that, like my dad says, you could throw a dog through the cracks of the walls. it was just
pretty drafty, huh?
Yeah, just one room at a time is what they put on. Yeah.
And what kind of things did your mom cook?
Did
she make things from that she'd learned as a girl? Or?
Yeah, she made things that she learned as a girl, and then it'd be regular common food. She'd make her own bread, and there'd be this the cinnamon rolls and stuff like that. She'd make that. And the best of all things that she made was, using American terms, I'd say it was a cottage cheese dumpling. It looked like a fried pie. She'd make us covering for it, just like pie crust.
Mm-hmm.
Roll it out, and she'd make this mixture of Schreiber milk, cottage cheese, and mm-hmm. they'd put it in a flour bag and let it hang out for two or three days until it really dries, you know, drains out good. And then she'd add these different ingredients of an egg or two in there and season it just right. And then she'd put a portion of this, a couple of tablespoons, and get one of these little, she'd cut out a section and roll it up like fried pie.
Mm-hmm. In the pastry. That sounds good.
Pastry, and then you put it in the boil. Listen, I used to eat 8 or 10 of those.
Sure. I never heard of anything just like that. I wonder if that was something she'd learned back then.
Yeah, that's what she learned back then.
Uh-huh.
And after my second wife and I were married, I'd tell them these stories about it. You know, they'd ask. And so decided to come up and try to make some of it. Shoot, it never did come out this way.
Not the same touch.
No,
huh?
Not the same touch. That's right.
But you wouldn't have had refrigeration out there at all, I guess.
No, no refrigeration.
What they
they had was a little frame structure. It was usually tapered like this, about this big at the top. And might not be over that high, about this square at the bottom, with a door in front. And they had burlapped sacks
mm-hmm.
that were ripped. And they had a container up on top set full of water. See? And these burlap sacks, and they put the end of it in this container of water and let it it'd evaporate down the sides.
And the wind would cool it. Sacks.
And the wind would keep stuff fairly cool, comfortable cool. But,
uh-huh.
But it wasn't anything like a refrigerator.
You couldn't keep things for very long, though.
No,
I suppose,
not very long. Uh-huh. Day or two, that's about it.
And did your mom do canning and that?
Yeah,
kind of
she
thing?
She loved to do canning. Yeah, she did canning.
Just sounds like such hard work.
Oh yeah, that is hard work. Mm-hmm. See, feeding these all these vegetables, what have you, and fruit.
Did you have any fruit trees out there?
Yeah, we had fruit trees, and Dad had. Did a little bit of farming, like I say, that we had much more rain than what we do now.
Up into the 20s, wasn't it? Wasn't in the 20s it began to get drier?
Yeah. And then they had a cellar, and they'd put this fruit on the shelves down in the cellar, which kept it cool enough, I mean, so they would it wouldn't spoil,
mm-hmm.
and that helped out during the.
So then, how old were you when they moved to Montezuma Canyon?
I must have been about 16, I guess.
Uh huh. Pretty well grown.
I was going to high school here.
Uh huh.
In Bisbee.
So when they moved over there, then what about high school?
I stayed in town then.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. My sister was married then, and I stayed with my sister part of the time. Then I stayed with my brother-in-law's aunt here in town.
I didn't ask you about brothers and sisters.
Yeah, I had just one sister.
That was older. Mm-hmm. What about Prohibition? That must have been in the Depression. That must have been going on.
Oh, yes, that was going on.
Tell me about the Depression first. How did that affect your family?
Oh, it affected it pretty much. Yeah, the Depression, it hurt a lot. And the government came through, and they dried up your livestock, the folks were at livestock.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd kill all the cows over a certain age, you know, that looked like they're over a certain age, kill all the livestock, dig a hole and bury all the stuff. We couldn't get one piece of meat out of it.
Why was that?
To keep the price up of the beef during the Depression.
When here people were going hungry?
Yeah, that's terrible. Right. And we couldn't even get a piece of meat out of them. They'd either dig this hole and, you know, and bury them, or else pour diesel fuel over them and burn the whole thing up. Or, and the better ones of that age, why they did. Douglas Hospital used to be the county hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd take the meat down there.
Something I didn't know about that.
And they gave the folks $7 a head for it.
Was that way below anything they could have sold them for? I mean,
Oh, yes, it was. It was way, way,
that was way below the market price.
Oh, yes. Now it's $500 a head.
Yeah.
That's
something. And then what about Prohibition? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
It's all going on.
Yeah.
What were people's attitude toward that?
Oh, some of them liked it, some of them disliked it. And up in Ash Canyon, that's that first canyon, mm-hmm. second canyon over. Why, there was an old timer up there with just his son. And so they had a still. And so this old boy would make this liquor and would take it to the fort to sell it.
Huh.
And he got caught there 3 or 4 times and was sent to jail for 3 months the first time or whatever it was. And then I don't know the rest of the time how much of a sentence he got. And so this one time he gets pretty well liquored up, sampling his own liquor, you know, because it was coming out of the still. And so he took a load up there, staggering around like this. Listen, you know, I got the best liquor in the country and nobody knows it but me.
Oh, gosh.
So he got caught so naturally.
Did you ever go to Ramsey Canyon to those dances they used to have up there?
Yeah, out there. Used to go to Ramsey Canyon. It'd just be right over the creek. And dance hall was right over the creek.
I've heard that. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it was right over the creek. You could hear the water. And the water was coming out of that box now, Box Canyon, what they used to call Box Canyon.
And it comes through Ramsey?
That's Ramsey Canyon, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And in that Bledsoe, Dr. Bledsoe,
mm-hmm.
he's the one who bought the property up there.
Oh.
He took care of some family here that the bill was so high that they couldn't pay for it, so he took over their property. He got a little strict right at the start, but not to too great an extent. And then finally, why he just fenced it off so nobody could go up to the box. But they used to go up there, people used to go up there over the weekends, walk up this Box Canyon over the creek, stepping from one stone to another or whatever, one rock.
Is that, so Ramsey Canyon goes on up into the Box Canyon?
Yeah.
It's like Ramsey Canyon, the head of it.
Yeah.
Or I guess it would be the bottom of it, actually.
Yeah, it would be the bottom of it, that's right.
I've never been up there very far.
Yeah, it'd probably be 2 sheer walls on both sides here. It'd be about, I'd say probably, at the most, probably 100 feet high.
Wow.
At the most, 30, 40 feet. Other places, but
well, weren't there orchards up in Ramsey Canyon? Orchards?
Oh yes,
up in there, fruit trees. And
there was an orchard up there. There was a man that had a bunch of trees up there by the name of Biederman, and so he sold fruit from up there, quite a bit of fruit in Ramsey.
And then what was Sierra Vista then? I know it was called Fry in those days, wasn't it?
Yes, it was called Fry. And when I was about so high, Dad takes me up to what was Fry then. And Fry's Ranch House. Did you ever see that?
I don't know. There was a little old house with a windmill or something right there in downtown part.
Well, this was about 3 blocks this side of the military reservation. On the right, going out.
Yeah.
There was a white house.
With a screen porch?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
Well, that was Fry's bait house. Mm-hmm. And then there were about three Dobie houses right there and the Wayno Schoolhouse. And they had two rooms down to the Wayno Schoolhouse. That's huh. there.
That was all.
That was all. Yeah.
Really changed.
Oh, it has.
And what about Wachuca City? Was there anything over there?
I don't remember. Wachuca City was built up like it is now. Mm-hmm. No, no, they had a few small built up cabins for soldiers and all, and their families, whatever. But there wasn't too much.
But when you were a boy, was the fort active? There were soldiers there?
Oh, yeah, they were colored. They were called
when the colored troops
were. That was, it was called Tet Cavalry, uh-huh. way back down the line. And then there was that, when the Second War came in, well, then they brought in a bunch of white boys in there. And it kept the coming in and coming in all the time with white officers, and they were intermixed, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And so they called it the colored boys. I mean, the government named it the Buffalo Outfit.
I've heard called that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so finding why it turned out to be practically all white.
Just kind of integrated into
yeah.
it. And then, so then after that, after you were out of high school, then you had the guest ranch, right?
Yeah.
And then you went into the Army.
Right.
And then were you back in Bisbee here?
Oh, so, I... Did you no, live I, here? I went up, like I told you, that the ranch was big enough to carry two families, you mm-hmm. know. So I went out and worked on the outside, carpenter work, really any construction work, my wife Diane. When I came out of the Army, this was in 46, Dad and I went to Tucson. And so I picked up a paper while I was looking through the ads, and I saw where there was some lots for sale on Speedway in Tucson. And so two lots was for $3,500 in Tucson. And so I read that article to my dad. Dad said, let's go look at it. So he bought it for me, the two lots. And he built a two-seat concrete block bedroom on the far end, far side of one of them. And then the next lot came up for sale, and so Dad bought that too for $1,800. And so that about a year or so after that, why it was sold for quite a little bit more.
Yeah, I bet in Tucson.
Oh yeah, and right now why there's high rise buildings on it.
Really,
if I could have kept it until now, it would have really been something.
Yeah, you really got the money.
A whole lot. It had been, a whole block in there.
Yeah, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. And then did you come back here after that?
I came back here, and then, we got a station, surf station in Tombstone.
Oh. You've been all over the county.
I've been all over the county, to Tombstone, and had that for about a couple of years. Then we had a cafe there in Tombstone, and we specialized in steaks. She'd never come from Tucson to eat steaks there.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
but they were
the place. And then we had a little old small pool hall there. And the high school kids didn't have any place to go to during their lunch hour, and so it was permissible for the high school kids to play pool at that time. Mm-hmm. It still is, I guess. Now I see kids all play pool, and uh, so uh, we'd have chili dogs, you know, for them for lunch. And
sounds
boy,
good.
That place would be bulging at the seams during lunch hour. And then right after lunch hour, hardly anyone comes in until evening, you know, and then there'd be a few.
Well, that was nice you had it for them to go to.
Yeah, and then we went out to Sierra Vista, and I was in real estate there with a fellow for a while. Crowd out there, prepared. And so they were starting to build houses there and what have you. And so there was a developer from Las Vegas came out there to get in on the show someplace in there. And so he started to talk to Frank Hill to let him build houses for him. I'm a little bit old-fashioned or something, but he had bricklayers there that wore cowboy boots. Now, listen, I couldn't see that for the love of money. You know, I mean, being on construction like that, to be wearing cowboy boots. But anyway, someplace along the line, he leased with an option to buy all about 5 acres of ground on 7th Street there in Sierra Vista. And he's going to put in a trailer court in there. And so he had about 14 pads poured. And in those days, why the pads were, the trailers were small.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be 8 by 16 pad would catch both doors on these small trailers. And so I got in good with him. And so when he got crosswise with Scracchiola, he comes up to me one day and he says, Frank, I want you to take over that trailer park. And I says, Harry, I can't take over that trailer park. Like, just that easy. He says, as far as I'm concerned, it could be that just that easy, you know. And I says, when do you want me to take it over? He says, well, the end of the month. And shoot, here it was about the 18th or the 20th of the month then.
Wow.
See? And so he says, yeah, you got to pay for, or he says, I didn't pay for those pads. You got to take care of them. These 14 or 18 pads that he had poured, you know, already. And he had spaces there, and all the water system was in, and the sewage system was in. So I have to pay for the pads, and he wouldn't take out any papers. He says, here's a spot for you to put your trailer, and you take out your living expenses out of the trailer. And he says, put the rest of the money right back in the trailer park because it won't just build up. So my wife and I managed the trailer park. And
what
we
was
put
the
in
name of that? Was it trailer
the
park?
El Corral Trailer Park.
Uh-huh.
It's that, so that, I put in $11,200 of my money in the trailer park. And then he comes out to one season there from Vegas, and he says, listen, Frank, we got to get out of here. Or he says, this crackhead's going to sue us. And he says, I don't want to be crossed up on anything. Which was right. He had good judgment. You know that on being sued, why anything that he said, you know, he wants to go through with it.
Uh-huh.
And so I says, how's about this $11,200 that I got in this thing? Or he says, listen, I'll make out a note. My wife and I will both sign it, give it to you, and we'll get you paid off pretty quick. And so I says, okay. And so I was waiting for the money, and no money was coming in. And so I asked the lawyer here how I could get this money from him. And he said, well, where's this guy living at? And I says, he's lived in Las Vegas, Nevada. And he says, brother, I feel sorry for you. And he says, you've got to go through the state of Arizona, the laws of the state of Arizona. the laws of the state of Nevada to get to him. And he says, you'll be paying more than what it's worth. And he says, my advice to you to do is to go there and be as close as you can to him. So that my wife and I moved up to Las Vegas, and I started working for him. And his payments, he'd pay every week. But he'd give me $20 on a Friday, and he says, come back Monday, and I'll give you the rest. And he says, well, what have you done with the money I gave you last week? Well, $20, you know.
Doesn't sound like too good a deal.
No. And so then he gave me a lot there for $3,500 for part payment. And so we put our trailer on there. And then I got a job up at Mercury, Nevada, at the test site. Uh-huh. And I worked for the tool club for about 13 years. At first, I was just a clerk there, going up there right at the start. And then I had an ulcerative tumor in my esophagus. And so I had to have it operated on. And they said I couldn't lift anything out over 10 pounds for the next 3 months or whatever. And so the foreman was a real buddy of mine. So he says, listen, I'm going to put you in the office to order tools. So I was ordering the tools for about 5 years for the test site. And my wife's folks was down here. They had a ranch in, you know where Greenbush Draw is?
Uh-huh.
There used to be a two-story house on the left-hand side just after you pass the overpass.
I didn't know that.